Come with me, and you'll be in a world of pure imagination. Take a look, and you'll see into your imagination.
Welcome. I'm Sol Lazar, and this is Metaphysical Musings. Before we get into the show, let me tell you a little bit about me. I'm a speaker, a performer, a reader, a healer, a radio host, and an author. I've been a part of the metaphysical community all my life, and along the way, I completed a series of formal studies, as well as all the connections we form from the people we meet. This show will share a variety of metaphysical topics. Sometimes they're more current based on items or issues that have been brought to the forefront, and sometimes they're just additional information for us to build on in our journey to an enlightened spirituality. I want to thank Angel Thacker and the New Age Guild for letting me be a part of the Spirit Talk lineup. Now, for those who listen to me here on Good Vibrations Radio, you know I like to start each show with a reading from Day by Day with James Allen. In 1903, James Allen published his essay, As a Man Thinketh. And he chose the title from chapter 23, verse 7 of Proverbs, which says, As a man thinketh in his heart, so is he. It was described by Allen as a book that will help you help yourself. Allen wanted all of us to know that in your own thought world, you hold the key to every condition, good or bad, that enters into your life. Your present reality is a direct outcome of your past thoughts, your intentions, your beliefs, as well as your actions. But your future is not predestined by your past. By working patiently and intelligently on your thoughts, your intentions, your beliefs, and your actions, you can remake your life and transform your circumstances. In Day by Day with James Allen, his essay has been broken into a separate section for each day of the month. For the fifth day of the month, James Allen shares Read the Right Books. People are anxious to improve their circumstances, but they're unwilling to improve themselves. They therefore remain bound. The late speaker, Charles Tremendous Jones, told his audiences, You are today the same you'll be 5 years from now, except for two things, the people you meet and the books you read. Now, the people you meet can't always be with you, but what you read in books can remain with you for a lifetime. If you spend just 15 minutes a day to read from a personal development book or a biography, at the end of a year, you'll have read 12 books. At the end of 5 years, 60 books. Through your changed thoughts, you move closer to your new future because your thoughts, your intentions, your beliefs leading to your actions will all have been changed. English writer Aldous Huxley observed that every person who knows how to read has the power to magnify himself, to multiply the ways in which he exists, to make his life full, significant, and interesting. In addition to the words of James Allen, there are a series of things I do every day. Now, I do a morning and evening series of forgiveness prayers. I do a gratitude affirmation. I do Ho'oponopono. I do unconditional love affirmations. And I collect a positive thought from the daily word produced by the Unity School of Christianity. You may have seen those little booklets, maybe in a doctor's office or some other professional office where they're sitting there. The daily word for Sunday, November 5th says, I gratefully surrender to the spiritual certainty that my life is in divine order. Let's just run the two of those together. read the right books, expand your mind, expand your thought, gain more information, gain more insights, gain more knowledge, and acknowledge and surrender to the certainty that your life is in divine order. Instead of trying to control the flow, go with the flow. So the daily word messages are powerful additions to the transformative transits we're all in the midst of experience. And I'll share more of that after we talk with our guest. This past week, I spoke with Carrie Williams, author of Eyes on the Prize, a kick-ass guide to setting and achieving great goals. Let's listen to that interview from Good Vibrations Radio. And when we return from that, we'll talk about some of the planetary aspects we can look forward to. Carrie Williams is a leadership coach, public speaker, facilitator, and author who specializes in working with creative and entertainment companies and legal entrepreneurs across the globe. She's proud to have helped thousands of clients and associates set and achieve life-changing goals with her Great Goals program. That's G-R-E-A-T, Goals Program. She's the founder of the Los Angeles-based Rain Shadow Coaching that's dedicated to help professionals and companies focus on the three tiers of fulfillment: professional success, personal growth, and overall well-being. She's a certified coach with the International Coach Federation and holds a graduate certification in evidence-based coaching. She's here to talk to us about her new book, Eyes on the Prize, a kick-ass guide to setting and achieving great goals. Carrie, I want to welcome you to Good Vibrations Radio.
Thank you so much for having me.
You're very, very welcome. So let's get really to the heart of it. We've had goal setting, goal achieving programs throughout the length and breadth. I think right after they did the first stone tablets, somebody came along and created the goal setting program. And so why? Mm-hmm. Why great goals? Why do we need great goals versus all the other goal programs out there?
Well, the reason we have goal setting programs are because as a being, we're destined for growth and we're destined to hunger for more. That's just innately part of our human species. And so, of course, we're looking for tools to help us achieve that. What I created with Great Goals was a simple, like having a coach in your pocket. It's a guide to help you along your way, and it's simple and sustainable and repeatable because we make things a lot more complicated than they need to be. And goal setting shouldn't be complicated. There's enough things in the world that are complicated. This should not be one of them.
Well, that's true. Now, I've heard that there's a Harvard study that they found that the people who were most successful in any graduating class were those who had the ability to set and focus on goals. And yet there are people today who say that we don't need to focus on goals. We can just create intentions and we can create desires and maybe we can even sacrifice some goats in the backyard and it will bring us... It'll bring us what we're hoping to achieve. But what's the main advantage of doing a goal setting, goal achieving program in our lives?
Sure. So before I start with that, let me just say that it's all semantics. Some people say intention. Some people say goals. Some people say focus. It all has the same end result if you do it properly. So I don't care what language you use. I just use goals because I'm a coach. That's my language. That's the language I speak, and that's the language my clients expect me to speak. Mm-hmm. But I think that it's really important to set that intention and that focus so that you take some ownership and control of what you accomplish in your life. I talk to people a lot about dreams versus goals, and dreams are when we sit back and we have a hope or we have a wish, but we don't have a plan. A goal is when we have a hope or a wish, but we make a plan to make it our reality. That's the difference. It's that action step and that intention. So I really encourage people to shift from just simply dreaming to planning and taking conscious action towards that goal.
You know, one of my mentors, Jeff McBride, always said that a goal is a dream with a deadline. Now, I don't know if that's original with him or not, but I'm passing it along because I think it's a wonderful way of distinguishing. A dream can often stay a dream because we don't take an action. So really, a goal planning process is really about determining action steps that we need to take to move us in that direction. Is that correct?
Yes. And before you even do that, you have to determine where you want to be. What do you want to make happen in this world? What do you want for your fulfillment and happiness? And that's the number one goal. When people come to work with me as a coach, the majority of them say, Carrie, I just want to be happy. And I'm sure you've heard that left and right. I just want to be happy. But happiness means different things for different people. So the first step is figuring out, what is it that's going to make you happy? What is it that is the goal that aligns with your core values and with what you want to give back to the world? And it is genuine for you, because so often we pick up a goal because someone told us we should, or we think that we should, or we know we have the capability of achieving it, so we should do that. Notice there's a lot of shoulds right now. And yeah. A truly genuine goal is a want, just a should.
What is our biggest roadblock to establishing and achieving and, well, getting a goal process going in our lives? What's our biggest roadblock?
Oh, that's an excellent question. I think that the biggest roadblock that I see quite often is that people would prefer not to try than to try and fail. They think it's safer because in our society, we equate failure with being a failure. We take it very personally. We can't seem to disassociate. We don't recognize that failure is the greatest chance for growth that we have. We learn more from a failure than we ever do from a success. And that people who we look at and hold as the pinnacles of success in our society, if we look at their history, they had some massive, huge, world-ending failures. But they learned from them and they kept going until they had that success. But in general, we fear that failure so much that we'd rather not try. We would rather choose the surety of failure than the possibility of trying and failing.
You know, in your book, Eyes on the Prize, you go through a chapter where you discuss the distinction between the SMART goals program, which, by the way, is one I never liked, to the GREAT goals program. Could you explain what you saw for the listeners? What you see as perhaps a shortfall in the SMART goals program and what you feel you've plugged or filled in that flaw in the GREAT goals program?
Absolutely. I would love to. So SMART goals, not to date myself, but that's what I learned in school. And SMART goals are really great for project management style goals, but they're not so great for big life-changing personal goals. And what I found with working with my clients is SMART goals are missing a few things. They are missing the genuine self-motivation. SMART goals are designed to get a goal accomplished that somebody gave to you, but they're not designed to help you create a goal that you're really excited about and will help you change your life. So the G in GREAT stands for genuine, making sure that your goal is self-motivated, that it aligns with your core values, that it aligns with the energy that you want to put out into this world, and that it is yours, not something you feel like you need to do or you should do, but also something you want to do. Also, the A in GREAT stands for affirmative, because I think that we need some more positivity in this world. Psychologically, we're programmed to work towards something, to gain something, to grow or to earn something, as opposed to avoiding something. So if we can phrase our goals in an affirmative way, as an approach goal instead of an avoidance goal, that gives us some added tools in our toolkit. And then finally, the T, which I love, it stands for totalitarian. And I don't mean be a goal Nazi, but I mean recognize when you set your goal that it needs to be in your control. So often when I work with folks, especially in the entertainment industry, the goals that they set are I want to win the Oscar, or I want to win the Emmy, or I want to book the job. Those are goals they really have no control over. They can do everything absolutely right, and it still depends on somebody else deciding if they can achieve that or not, right? And so it's really important in this day and age to set a goal that you can control so that when you give it your all, when you put your full effort in, you can actually achieve it. Because what happens, do you think, if I set a goal and I give it everything I have, and then at the end, I don't achieve that goal because somebody decides not to give it to me, what happens next time I try and set a goal?
Yeah. I already think I can't do it.
Mm-hmm.
Because it does, it's it always reminds me, that whole phrase reminds me of Cher in the movie Moonstruck, when she tells her father at the kitchen table that she's just been asked to get married and she's going to marry this guy. And he says, don't do it. It doesn't work for you. And she says, what do you mean it doesn't work for me? He said, you got married and he died. She said, yeah, but he died. She said, yeah, I know people married many years. Nobody dies. It doesn't work for you. You know?
Well, you mentioned it in the intro. Our beliefs are powerful things. If we look at a goal and we go, oh, I can never make that happen. Guess what? We can't. If we look at a goal and we say, oh, that's going to be so hard. It's going to take so much work. Guess what? It will.
So there's a lot of discussion within goals, within through the years, of, you know, even David Schwartz's book, you know, Think Big. Do we need to make our goals big, or do we need to develop a goal muscle? Do we need to do goals, like you said, totally within our realm, totally within our power, to develop that muscle to go bigger and bigger? What do you recommend for when we sit down and say we're going to do our great goal? How do we do it?
So I think it's a combination. I think it has to be big enough that we get excited about it, right? And that we have some results. Because what's the point of nothing but baby steps? That's not very fun or exciting. But I also think that it is a muscle that we need to practice utilizing. We need to consistently take action every day. And here's the interesting thing. So most people think that they need willpower to make goals happen, right? They're just going to grit their teeth and push through it and make it happen. And every day they're going to make great choices and be accountable, right? Studies are showing now that just as impactful as willpower is imagination. So if you can really clearly see where it is you want to go and you can visualize it, and with all your senses, you can see it and taste it and smell it and hear it and feel how your life will be different once you accomplish it. That is as powerful a motivator as willpower is. So I think it's a combination. You have to dream big because it needs to be exciting and motivating. But then you also have to practice exercising that muscle. And like a muscle, the more you exercise it, the better you are at it.
And do you find that sometimes it's also our definition of our goal that creates complexity in what it is we're trying to do? You mentioned the happiness, but for instance, if I said, you know, I want to be an auto mechanic working at GM and I want to be head of their shop and maybe even a shop steward, and I try to write that down as if it's one goal and I've added so many things in there. Is it important for us to try to really simplify down to a core element of what we're focused on?
So I think it's important to break it down so we can be really clear, so that if we have meshed 10 goals into one and we hit 9 out of 10, to anyone else that would look like success, but to us it looks like failure, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And so I think that we fall down that rabbit hole. I think we also say, well, to be happy, I need A, B, C, D, E, and F. And if you get A, B, C, D, and E, you're still not happy because you didn't hit F. So I think that we need to reshape how we set our goals, but I also think we need to really reshape how we define success and make it a really personal definition. Because more often than not, our default is to compare ourselves to other, and that's our measure of success. Was I faster than the person next to me? Do I make more money than the person at the desk next to me? Am I a better mom than the other moms in the kindergarten class, right? We compare ourselves, and that's how we measure success. Instead of comparing to where we started, am I better today than I was yesterday?
I think that's
an important distinction. And that's a big mindset shift.
Yeah, that's an important distinction. I want to reemphasize that for the listeners as well, that what you're really saying is what I've heard you say, don't let me tell you what you're really saying, but is that we have to compare ourselves to ourselves in order to measure our improvement on whatever it is we're trying to do. That's the only metric that has real value in our lives.
And we also need to compare ourselves to our average effort. And this is a tricky one because most of us compare ourselves to our best self, right? I want to give my best. I want to be my best. Well, by definition, your best is once. It's not your standard and your average.
Yeah, but it was a good day.
But we don't ever say, I want to make my average day better than normal. We say, I want to be the best, or I want to, you know, give my best, or I'll give 110%. So it's also a reframing in that and understanding that we can't be at our physical peak and mental peak all of the time, because then it's no longer the peak. What we're talking about is raising our average. And that's not very sexy, so we don't like to talk about that.
Well, and I going back to where you started also, when you said people will come to you and say that they want to be happy, I find that's a trap, because what really is happiness, in the sense of if everything that we tend to ascribe to happiness is something external instead of something internal. So I can never really achieve happiness by making it an external goal, in my opinion. And I think that's a real trap when we start looking at, if I do this, will I be happy? If I achieve this, will I be happy? I think it's probably important for us to take that out of the equation. Work on happiness as an internal job, but work on doing other things that we may enjoy more as an external job.
Agreed. And also recognize that happiness is a choice. Happiness is not brought on by circumstance or by situation, but by a response to that circumstance or situation. I have seen people who have true joy in the direst of situations, and I've seen people who have amazing lives and seem to have everything that would prescribe happiness, yet they are not happy.
And actually,
it's a matter of what we choose.
And since I'm a big movie buff, in the movie Author with Al Pacino, his wife leaves him on her 40th birthday. She has all these kids from all these different marriages and relationships. She farms them all out. And Al's left with just his 12-year-old son and then the littlest one who comes back because his father doesn't really want him. And he's putting on a play, and the actress in the lead of the play and he start a relationship. And one night they're going out to dinner and the two boys are going to go with them. And they're all in the bathroom, the three men, the oldest son, the littlest one, and Al getting ready. And the oldest son says, "Why are we going out tonight?" And she said, "Well, she wants to do something." He said, "Isn't there enough to do here?" He said, "Yeah, but that's laundry and homework." And he said, "She's not really happy." And the 12-year-old says, "Happy? Happy? Who the hell is happy?" So every time somebody tells me they want to be happy, I think of that 12-year-old brushing his teeth in the bathroom there. Because, again, it's as you said, it's an internal job. It's not external. But what do we need to really be successful at our goal setting? In other words, if I'm going to set down, what do I have to at least commit or agree to with myself that I'm going to do to put this process into practice for my life?
You have to agree to give it time and effort. And when you fail, to pick yourself back up. If you can just commit to that, you will achieve your goals. You can pick up, in all honesty, you can pick up a multitude of goal-setting books. They will help you get where you want to get to if you just follow them. I wrote my book because I wanted a simplified version, and I wanted it to feel like my readers had a coach in their pocket. And it's effective, and it's personalized because there's exercises that you can do throughout the process, so it's very personalized to you. But it's not the only book that can get you where you want to get to. So you just have to decide you want to make a change, and then decide that you're going to. And that's the basic. If you can do those two things, we can make things happen for you.
But you also talk about the attitude of perfectionism or perfection language, as you refer to it. And how does that sabotage a goal process?
Well, we talked a little bit about it when we talked about what does success mean and how do we measure our level of success compared to other people. So when I talk about perfection language, here's some examples. I will be the best parent I can be. I will reach my full potential. That's a kicker because that's the one I grew up on all the time. I was a gifted student in a small island in Alaska, and it was always about Carrie reaching her full potential. It's a lot of pressure. I will be my best self every day. Yeah. So perfection language is that desire to reach the ideal. The problem is that ideal doesn't actually exist because once you reach it, there is always something better to strive for. So you set a moving finish line for yourself. And when we set a goal that's a moving finish line, we never get the celebration, the accomplishment of reaching it. It would be like if someone started running a race and they thought it was a 5K and partway through they found out it was a 10K and then they found out it was a half marathon and then they found out it was a marathon, right? So if we don't have a very clear visualization of what the finish line is, it's incredibly frustrating in the goal setting process. And what will happen is you'll stop setting goals and you'll stop working towards them. Because
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
I know. I was going to say because you've essentially ensured frustration and failure simply because you set such a perfectionist goal, it's impossible to reach.
It seems to me that one of the challenges for that we all experience also in goal setting is that if we said, let's say I write down a set of 10 action steps and I get to step three and I find out it's not what I expected. Maybe like you said, it takes longer or maybe it requires me to take another five steps. I always think of the, I may misstate this. So if you know the correct thing, you certainly correct me, is that what I've often heard is that on the moonshots, the spaceships to the moon, they're off course about 90 to 95% of the time. So they're constantly doing course corrections. And it strikes me that in order for us to achieve any goal, we have to be flexible enough to constantly do course corrections, to recognize that what we thought we had to do, we may not have to do, or we may have to do more.
Exactly. I wholeheartedly agree. I like to liken it as to climbing a mountain. If you climb a mountain, you don't start at the bottom and go straight to the tippy top in a straight line, right? You zigzag back and forth. And sometimes you find a path that's a little easier, and sometimes it gets a little steeper for a little while. And sometimes it's a really solid trail, and sometimes it's rocky and you're not certain you're on the right path. The goal setting journey is exactly like that. But as long as you continue taking steps forward, you will get to the top. That's what we have to remember.
And do you see this goal setting process as part of how we assess or measure our own self-worth?
I do, because if you ask someone to describe themselves, more often than not, you're going to get a title in that description. I'm a mom, I'm a coach, I'm a doctor, I'm a radio host, right? And where we attach our self-worth is to how well we do that title. Are you a mediocre coach or are you an amazing coach that charges $3,000 an hour? Are you a radio show host that nobody listens to, or do you have a massive following and amazing fans? Are you the mom who, you know, can't get lunch on the table, or are you the head of the PTA? So we really attach our self-worth to how well we do our title in comparison to others again.
And so that's really why achieving goals or setting goals that we achieve help us really reframe our own self-worth and our own identity, if I understood that correctly.
Yes. And it also builds confidence. You know, remember the little story from when you were a kid about the train, the little engine that could, chugging up the mountain, and he says, I think I can. Well, what do you think would have happened if he'd said, I don't think I can.
Well, then I think he would have gone down the mountain and had a few beers with his buddies at the bar at the base. I mean,
I think he would have stopped. And what do you think happens the next time? After he makes it to the top, the next time he climbs that mountain, it changes to, I know I can, I know I can, I know I can. Mm-hmm. And that's what setting and achieving goals does for us. When we have success, we know that we can do it again. Even if the goal is different, even if the path is different, even if the journey is different, we've already done it once. We just have to take action a second time.
And, you know, you talk about in the book about the difference between an obstacle and an excuse in your goal process is your mindset. Mm-hmm. Could you explain a little bit about mindset to the listeners so they understand what it is, what their ownership part of that is to keep themselves moving forward?
Absolutely. So mindset is your perspective and attitude in which you view the world. It's kind of your lens. And to most people, when they hear mindset, they immediately think, oh, positive mindset versus negative mindset. I'm a, you know, glass half empty versus a glass half full. In the coaching world, we talk about growth mindset versus fixed mindset. So there are some actual attributions. A growth mindset is a person who believes that effort and energy can increase skill. So you're not born with everything you have. You can cultivate it. You can get smarter. You can learn new skills. You can learn new habits, you can grow and continue to grow. A fixed mindset really believes that what you're born with is what you got. And no matter how much effort you put into it, it's not really going to change. So I'm sure that in school you probably heard people that were said, well, I'm just not a math person.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, I used to say that, I'm just not a math person. That's fixed mindset. Growth mindset would say, oh, I'm not really great at math. But if I study a little harder, I can be.
Hmm.
So effort and energy are really valued in the growth mindset. A growth mindset also gets inspired by the success of people around them. Whereas a fixed mindset gets a little threatened because they feel like the person next to them's success is at their expense. There's a little less to go around for them. Right?
Yeah. It becomes a mirror of what they themselves haven't done.
Mm-hmm. And so what happens is a fixed mindset person is really set on constantly proving themselves. So if they're told they're smart, then they want to constantly prove over and over again that they're smart. And so mm-hmm. what starts to happen is if there's a task that they don't think that they can look smart doing, they will just avoid that task.
Mm.
Whereas the growth mindset goes, ooh, even if I can't be successful at that task, I'm going to learn something from it. And that's the goal.
Hmm.
So we are all really both important. Fixed and growth. Mm-hmm. It's really important. We're all both fixed and growth mindset. And we all have areas where we're really fixed or we're really growth. The great news is, unlike IQ, you can actually change your mindset. You can shift it. You can practice and identify where it is that you're particularly fixed and practice making growth choices. And you don't have to be growth in every aspect of your life. There are some places where it's okay to go, oh, this, I'm just going to approach this fixed mindset and I don't really need to change it because it doesn't affect my life or impact it in a great way. But there are some aspects that are really important and we need to look at them and see if we can shift. Because it changes on a fundamental level our joy and our actions. And can I share an example?
Certainly, please do.
Okay, so they did a study with four-year-olds, and they gave them a really hard puzzle to do. And half of these four-year-olds were fixed mindset, and half of them were growth mindset in the beginning. And all of them had the same joy in doing this puzzle, and all of them had the same success. And then after they had that challenge, they said, great, now I'm going to give you a much harder puzzle. What do you think the fixed mindset children said?
That they couldn't do it.
They said, oh, no, thanks, I'm good.
Yeah.
The growth mindset children tackled it with an increased joy from the first time. They had more joy with the harder puzzle than they did from the first puzzle.
Okay.
And one of the little kids even said, oh, I was hoping I would get a challenge today. And another one asked if they could have the names of the puzzle so they could go home and practice. Right? I know. That's the kind of four-year-old I want to be.
That's probably the kind of four-year-old you were from what you said earlier. So.
Honestly, I was probably a pretty fixed little girl. I was very invested in looking smart.
Okay, all right.
It took me, and so I speak from experience because I grew up incredibly fixed mindset. It wasn't until my adulthood that I realized that it was holding me back and that I could actually take some control and shift it. So.
Well, that would seem to be then, I think, probably our greatest individual challenge for all of us, even though there's growth mindset and fixed mindset people, is that we still have a view of ourselves that's predetermined. And we tend to do things, if I've got this right, by what fits into the box of our predetermination of who we are. So I think even if we're growth, as you said, we're going to have some fixed areas. And even if we're fixed, mm-hmm. we might have a couple of growth areas. But mm-hmm. isn't it that we're really always measuring ourselves against the way we see ourselves? And that is really a reflection of other people's opinions of us. Maybe that was the wrong question.
I think you hit the nail on the head.
Oh, okay.
No, I think that you hit the nail on the head. It really comes back to how we believe we're being perceived and how we want to be perceived. And I would say that that's not unhealthy. We just need to shift our perspective and maybe think about it as, do I want to be perceived as someone who's dedicated to growth and effort? Or do I want to be perceived as someone who's dedicated to initial success and perfection?
So in the context of goals and achieving goals, one of the things I've heard and shared for years is that very often we can share with others our go from goals, like I'm gonna lose weight, I'm gonna take up running, I'm gonna stop smoking, I'm going to no longer do axe murders on Saturdays, you know, whatever it is that we're going away from. Mm-hmm. But that we should be very cautious about sharing with others our go to goals. Because it goes back to that mirror we were talking about earlier. Sometimes others feel threatened by what we're doing because they see it as a measurement of what they're not doing, even though that's not our intention. Have you found that to be the experience, or do you recommend people share their goals with those around them at all times? I mean, I'm really asking for that sake of it, you know.
Sure. So there's a couple questions in there, and I'm going to start with the first one. I recommend that everyone only set go-to goals. So the A stands for affirmative, and one of that is set an approach goal. Set a goal where you're working towards something or gaining something instead of avoiding something. We are psychologically programmed to want to gain and learn. And that's why so many people, when they set a weight loss goal, struggle with it because it's inherently negative goal. Right? I will lose weight, or I will not eat food, or I will, it's inherently negative. Same with quitting smoking. So you can shift those so that they are approach goals instead of avoidance goals. If I wanted to quit smoking and I instead said, I will have happy, healthy lungs, that's what I'm working towards. That's what I'm trying to gain.
Okay.
And so I'm focusing on the positive. In addition, if my goal was to quit smoking and I slipped and had a cigarette, I just failed. If my goal is to have happy, healthy lungs and I slip and have a cigarette, I just need to change my strategy. It's not a failure. It's a learning curve.
Gotcha.
So we should all go for go-to goals instead of go-from goals. And I think that sharing goals is a good thing because studies have shown that you are more likely to achieve your goal if you share it. There's something about being accountable, but you also have to be strong enough in your goal setting to know that when you get pushback from people, when you get negative feedback or naysaying from people, it has absolutely nothing to do with you and your goal, and it has everything to do with their mindset.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And that is something that's really hard to remember, because if you're struggling on a weight loss journey and you're finally trying to make some changes and you're seeing some results, and you have people going, ugh, what are you doing that for? Or don't get too skinny, or, you know, that's not a sustainable diet. Why are you making that choice? It can be really hard. So I would say share, but share with one or two people who really support you and are on your team. And also share with the intention of not getting feedback, just getting accountability. Just having someone on the journey beside you, but not someone pushing you up the mountain. Okay. Does that make sense?
Yes. Or even putting boulders in your path, you know, whichever it is. But I think it goes, a big part of this goes back to what we discussed earlier, is that it's also important, and maybe this gets back to mindset. If I'm going to always reflect my image of myself in your eyes, and I know you don't support this goal, I may allow myself to sabotage it. So it's also important that we start to see ourselves in our own eyes in order to be successful at whatever goal we set. It's about how we see it. And I think that's an important element you bring out in your book. And I think it goes to the heart of our own image and mindset about ourselves.
Yeah. Well, look, if we are in a fixed mindset zone, we surround ourselves with other fixed mindsets because they're safe to be around. Because a growth mindset really challenges us and makes us uncomfortable. They put us right at the edge of that mirror of seeing that we can accomplish more and we're choosing not to do it. And we don't feel good about that. So we avoid it at all costs. So the fact of the matter is, if you've been in active fixed mindset for a while, odds are most of the people around you are active fixed mindsets as well. And you're going to see them crop up more and more as you try and change and shift yourself to growth. It's going to become really glaringly obvious. But just recognize that at one point, that person was a safe choice for you to be around. They were the comforting choice. And now maybe not the best choice.
Well, one of the things we share on this show, rightly or wrongly, is that we have to look at, as we go through our shifts and changes in lives, about the people that we've picked up along the way, because we may have to shift and change them as well. And we don't suggest, I certainly don't suggest we do that in a nasty way. It should always be done in a loving way. But that's often the need to say that I'm no longer where I was, and now I need people who are supportive of where I am. And hopefully we do.
It is perfectly okay and healthy to say, I am committed to personal growth, and I want the people around me to hold that valuable as well.
And has the whole, besides your eyes on the prize, a kick-ass guide to setting and achieving great goals, besides your writing of this book, has the process of goal setting changed with the different generations, as you say, from where you started with SMART goals to now?
It has. And interestingly enough, this most recent generation has been the most challenging, I think, for the status quo. So the majority of my clients are not millennials, although they're starting to influx in. And so I'm starting to work with them on a one-on-one basis, but I have been working with executives quite a bit who, millennials are their next generation of employees. They're the future of the company, and they're struggling with how to get them to buy into company culture and goal setting, because the millennial mindset is very different than Generation X and the boomer mindset. So millennials were raised by parents who taught them wonderfully that they can have anything and be anything they want to be. And they were really encouraged to follow their passion and to focus on, these words again, being happy. In addition, they were rewarded just for participating. I'm sure you heard the FER a few years ago about how on field day, everyone got a ribbon.
I actually hate that, but that's me. I do too.
I would say if you give your best, get a ribbon. It doesn't matter if you win, but you have to actually, just for lining up, you don't get it. But that's my philosophy. So here's what happened as a result. The millennials differ in two great ways when it comes to goal setting. One, it's really important that the goals that they set are aligned with their core values and their greater purpose, because they're absolutely not willing to set and work for a goal they don't believe in. So I'm sure you've seen this phenomenon where a millennial will sit patiently for a longer amount of time before taking a job rather than work for a company that they don't believe in. And part of that's because they have a greater safety net than any generation that came before them, right? Because their parents have greater wealth. But they have that luxury of saying, no, I don't really agree with that, and I'm not going to do that. Two, they're much more responsive to positive reinforcement than negative. So when you're helping a millennial on the path to goal achievement, you have to use positive support, encouragement, and a lot of validation. They're much more useful than criticism and punishment. In fact, criticism and punishment can shut a millennial down because they haven't learned to process it. They haven't learned to use it as a valid form of feedback. And so what companies are finding is they're having to shift the way they communicate and set expectations for the next generation in the workforce.
Well, that sounds like a bigger challenge. I just found that in my dealing with them, I found my opinion, my judgment, my generation, that they have unrealistic expectations. But we'll see.
Well, realistic or not, those are their expectations, right? And realistic or not, we have to work with that.
Yeah,
because
it's just,
that's our new workforce.
In the workforce, though, it's about collaboration. And very often the millennials that I've dealt with are not the best collaborators because they're very individual and they're individualists.
Yeah.
And so they're not good at teams, and teams are really the success of most businesses, industries, and everything else, not the individuals. So it'd be interesting to see where we are 10 years from now.
Yeah. Well, what you say is really interesting because they're also the most connected generation. They grew up on text and on social media, so they're more connected than any generation before them.
But they're not empathetically connected. They're not emotionally connected. They're text connected. That's a very important distinction, which is different
than
being...
So that's the big challenge, right?
Yeah.
Teaching empathy.
Yeah, teaching the real connection to other people. They like their tribe. But their tribe is not necessarily connected at a really emotional level. They're connected at similar external type of activities or interests. That's important. I work in environments where teams are very, very important. And millennials are a challenge only from their inability to integrate into teams easily. The individuals on an individual basis, some are better than others, but they're just not used to working with people because they're individuals. So,
right. Well,
I'm not going to solve that today.
The power that we're going to have once we crack that nut and the impact that generation can have potentially once they figure that out for themselves. I look at them and I see so much untapped potential, and I'm really excited to see what they choose to create with it.
Okay. I mean, I don't want to make it sound like I'm damning them, because I'm not. I'm not informed or expert enough. I just know my experience. But needless to say, for them, for goal setting, for their best, put their best foot forward, it's really important, again, to emphasize the positive reinforcement. Let them know what's working, what's well, or what they can build on what's working. But avoid criticism, avoid the negative, and this goes back to those everybody gets a ribbon. Everything in life for us has a consequence. There's karma for everything. But unfortunately, for many of them, they don't want the karma. And that's where we don't really deal with the consequence. We have to deal with a reinforcement or a positive reinforcement.
Karma, and also a reinforcement of effort and energy, right? Because we are a society that really rewards outcome. Even in our school system, it's not an effort-based grading system. It's an outcome-based grading system. I gave a presentation earlier this year at a really well-known college in somewhere in the middle of the country. I can't give too many details, but I was speaking to a group of instructors and also students. And one of the students said, well, you keep talking about being growth mindset, but I don't have time to be growth mindset because I'm on a scholarship. I have to maintain a certain GPA. So I have to take classes that I know I can get that grade in. So if there's something that I want to learn, even if I think it'd be really interesting, unless I know I can do it, I can't choose to do it. Or my parents will be disappointed, I'll lose my scholarship, I'll lose my funding. And when he said that, the teachers in the room just, they audibly gasped. Because that's the antithesis of what they want a student to say, right? They want a student to be excited and challenged and grow in multiple areas. But that, in a sentence, was a summation of what, right now, our education system creates. Yeah. And so it's really interesting to think, how can we shift that as well?
Well, in your conclusion of your book, Eyes on the Prize, you cite two poems, and I'm certainly not going to read the poems, but the one by Burton Braley is about start where you stand. And I think that that's important advice, certainly why you include it, of course. And important advice for all of us is that it doesn't matter what your past is. Start right where you are. Don't think about what hasn't worked in the past. Start right where you are. And then you also do Invictus by William Ernest Henley, which I love because it concludes with, I am the master of my fate. I am the captain of my soul. And we need to take that ownership of ourself in order to steer our ship in the direction that we choose. So Eyes on the Prize, a kick-ass guide to setting and achieving great goals, G-R-E-A-T. Carrie, what would you like us to take away from Eyes on the Prize? What would you like us to do with it? And how would you like this to be your legacy in the world?
If your listeners take nothing else away, I hope that they have learned from this conversation the two principles that I hold dear and that I base this book on, which is one, that everyone deserves to feel fulfilled and live their passion. Everyone does. And two, everyone has the potential to make their dreams a reality. If you can just hold on to those two thoughts, you don't have to wholeheartedly believe them. You just have to believe that it's possible that they're true. You can start to make changes in your life. If you want to buy this book, you can get it on Amazon. You can ask any of your local bookstores to get it for you. You can get it at my website, which is eyesontheprizebook.com. I can send you a signed autographed copy. If you have a great goal, you can share it on the website with the community there. They will not naysay you. They will not pull you down. They will only encourage you and help you and lift you up. And you can also go back to that website for future live events. Every so often have workshops where you can come live and work with me and we can do some of this together.
So that's Eyes on the Prize, Kick-Ass Guide to Setting and Achieving Great Goals. Our guest was Carrie Williams. As you heard her say, you can go to her website, eyesontheprizebook.com. You can also visit rainshadowcoaching.com. As you heard in that interview with Carrie Williams, we have an opportunity to really change any aspect of our life if we'll plan. Take the action steps and plan. Don't do it just randomly. Do it with intention. Do it with planning. Do it with action. You know, October 22nd, the sun entered Scorpio. You might find yourself a little more guarded. You might find yourself a little more paranoid or worried. But at the same time, you can get in touch with what's driving you inside. And then on Thursday, November 2nd, Saturn squared Chiron. Now, this is important because Chiron is the wounded healer. Those inner wounds are the wounds we carry forward into everything we do. With Saturn forming that square to Chiron on Thursday, there will be fears now of being competent or effective enough to meet your responsibilities. Or you could find it hard to strike out on your unique path due to your fears or insecurities. So your desire to break from the status quo will be strong, but you don't have the confidence at this time. And when you couple that with that additional level of insecurity that Scorpio can add into it, that paranoia, that worry, that uncertainty, this is not a good time to break free from the pack. And then Friday, we had our full moon in Taurus, which was a big transit because full moons are culmination points. They represent the harvest of whatever project you began 6 months earlier on the new moon. So take a look at what you were doing at the end of May. Where were you focused? What were your intentions? The harvest can be an ending as well as a reaping from the fruit of your effort. It helps identify which the efforts you put into that were worthwhile and which were just about learning. Whether you receive a reward or a loss, you'll know which steps to take next. And since full moons are always about emotional expressions, watch from Friday forward those people, including yourself, who were stubborn, who were rooted to where they needed to be. Don't push the bull, pet the bull, and play nicely. Even today, as you listen to this, you're still in the shadow of that full moon and that energy, and some people will still be reacting from that type of behavior. Friday was a little unusual. It was unpredictable. Do your best to recover from it. Patch any relationships that need patching from Friday, but try not to let that restlessness carry you forward into everything you're doing. Mercury entered into the direct and ready to speak their mind Sagittarius today at 11:19 a.m. Pacific. So any actual or perceived harm you inflicted on others will be brought to your attention in all its exquisite glory. So while this transit of Mercury entering Sagittarius will bring honesty to the forefront, it can also create too much bluntness and directness. You may find yourself dreaming. Don't get caught in your dreams. Deadlines are going to be missed. Appointments are going to be forgotten. And November is going to require a little bit more effort and focus. So expect to make mistakes. Expect to dream big, talk big, explore new ideas, and even plant a visionary flag or two. Just remember to write down your ideas and visions. Because if you don't, you'll be on to the next dream big, talk big, planting visionary flags. And next Saturday, the Saturday coming forward, Saturn in Sagittarius will trine Uranus in Aries. Now, a trine is a karmic connection. It's intended to create changes you require in your life. So when the planet of reason and responsibility trines Uranus, the planet of change and eccentricity, logic and practicality take a vacation. You're going to find yourself looking at the new, wanting the new. But at the same time, there's a part of you that's going to be trying to balance the old. You're going to feel creative and stimulating, and you're going to be looking to incorporate those new elements into your life. This is the time for finding your way through the dark and into the light. It's the time for digging into your shadow self and healing those wounds. This is your time. Remember, healing, improving, and growing is not linear. It's not circular. It's a spiral. And it keeps bringing us back to the same lessons and elements so we can go deeper and learn on a deeper level. Whatever you do this month, do it from your heart. Let your heart be your guide. Let your heart and your love be your guide. Thank you for listening to Metaphysical Musings on Spirit Talk. Additional shows sharing metaphysical topics can be found at goodvibrationsradio.com. If you have any questions or missed any elements, send an email to solazar@gmail.com. That's solazar@gmail.com. Many blessings as you journey through this energy. We'll talk again next week. Namaste.
There is no life I know to compare with pure imagination. Living there, you'll be free if you truly wish to be.